All week. Go ahead and call this Fire Committee meeting to order this October 1st. We got a full committee present, so thank you, gentlemen. We'll go ahead and we'll begin with item number one, which is approval of the minutes from the September 4th, 2018 meeting.
Motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
You have a motion and a second for approval. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and vote. All in favor of approval of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to agenda item number two, which is public comments. This is the opportunity for members of the public to address the committee on any agenda item or any other item that you'd like to discuss. Is there anyone who'd like to address the committee today?
Got a quiet bunch.
Seeing none, at this point, I know Mr. Cunane, you had asked for some time to make some comments today. Would you still like to do that?
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge the efforts of the crews that went up to assist with the hurricane and the flooding. Chief, if you could just give us a little five-second snippet of what they did, number one. And number two, Eric, I'd like to try and see if we could acknowledge them in some way at next week's or future council meeting, please.
Okay. Can I say something on that? I'm not trying to be a jerk, but if there's other staff in the town that did things too, it should all be in all inclusive.
Absolutely. The police had significant presence up in Georgetown during the last week here with the flooding. Yeah. They may have had others along the way. Certainly not trying to exclude them. I just
no. But if it's a request to Eric, if you know, and we're going to do that, which is a great idea. You know, just everybody from the town that assisted in that would be good, I think.
Thank you.
Like, don't.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. No, understood.
Can you give us a rundown, Chief, of what they
did? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So the first guy we had deployed, he was gone about 2 weeks. He was activated through the state for the USAR team. He did a lot of boat operations, rescues in the Marion, and then they transitioned. They kind of followed the floodwaters down to North Myrtle. We had two guys deployed through the National Guard. They were stationed in Georgetown doing some medical support and things of that nature. And then we had a four-person team that went up with a 19-foot flat-bottom boat and also an inflatable boat, and they served in two roles. They served as a water rescue crew, but they also backfilled on the Horry County engines to give those guys and gals a break that had been working for 2 weeks straight. So they did some good things up there, a couple medical calls where our guys got people back, a couple fires, a couple rescues. So they did a lot of good things, met some really nice people, and they're all, as of this morning, they're all back and safe. Equipment's good. They're good to go, so they did a great job.
Thank you, Chief.
Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to thank our staff in the EOC during the storm. The preparation was second to none. You should all be very proud. I know that we as a council are very proud of you and all the staff, and I want to thank you tremendously for your efforts. We dodged a bullet, but we were completely prepared, and that came from each staff member that was present. All of you did a phenomenal professional job, and we owe all of you a debt of gratitude. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Share your comments.
Yeah, I'll just say that I was here for a lot of that time just to kind of see how EOC runs, and I'm very impressed with the whole operation, Amanda, and everybody who participated in that, and because things were slow, I actually had an opportunity to tour all the fire stations that day, kind of keep busy and get out of here a little bit, and just very impressed with all the guys and women who were there, cooking out, keeping busy, cleaning up, getting prepared, and it was really eye-opening to hear all of the information about the needs and the accomplishments of the department. It was a great day, so we made you know, the best out of a difficult day. So, Chief, I appreciate you arranging that as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I do have a question, Eric, and this is my responsibility. I think I maybe dropped the ball here. Were we scheduled to have an update on the emergency preparedness today?
I don't recall, sir. I know that Ms. Knight and I have been talking about getting ready for next month's.
Okay.
Potential committee meeting
next month,
because at that point we'll have the draft emergency operations plan ready for your consideration.
Good. I didn't see an agenda item, so I wanted to make sure that we weren't expecting her to speak today. Okay, great. All right, so we'll close public comments and we'll move on to item number three, which is a review of mental health initiatives for first responders. And Mr. Kinane asked for this to be on the agenda, so I'll start with you, sir, if you want to preface this conversation.
No, I just said it's a very serious matter, and I think for police and firefighters last year we had more suicides than we had line of duty deaths, and that's a threshold that it's been approaching a while. We've watched it climb, and to where we are. I mean, I've lost friends to suicide, probably not more than line of duty, but the next generation, that's what they're going to be facing. And something I thought we could look at it and make sure that if there is anything that you need from us, we should back you up on it. So that's the only reason I put it on the agenda.
Great.
Well, thank you all, and thank you for allowing us to a forum to talk about this. It's definitely a problem. It's something that doesn't get talked about enough, and it's not just police, fire, EMS. I mean, I think it's the country as a whole. Mental health is stigmatized, and we need to get it out in the open and talk about it just as any physical ailment. So we do appreciate the opportunity to kind of talk about first responder mental health in this presentation. So I broke this into three topics. We're going to talk about the increased rates of suffering for first responders, the methods of support that police and fire are currently employing, and what we've kind of done historically over the past few years, and then overcoming the stigma of mental health and asking for help and reporting and things of that nature. So police, fire, EMS, I mean, obviously, I love what I do. I consider it one of the greatest callings that you can do. We're able to help people and citizens and visitors in their greatest time of need. But with that comes a lot of difficult things that we see, a lot of heartache, a lot of sick and dying people and property loss. So firefighters, police, and EMS carry a lot of baggage with those calls and things that may not surface for years that kind of they're able to suppress. So that kind of speaks to the bigger mental health issue that everybody needs a chance to kind of to get these things out of their closet. So here's some of the facts that have come out, and I have references at the end, and I can provide you some of these papers. They're a difficult read, but they're good. But and just looking at firefighters and law enforcement, they have a significantly higher rate of PTSD compared to the general population. And even with law enforcement, they're significantly higher than firefighters. And my personal belief on that is many times they're by themselves in a car. They'll go to a call, they'll respond, they'll do a hot wash after, but ultimately they go back to their vehicle and they go back to their patrol, and they don't have a way to vent if they're hurting. Firefighters have the luxury of being in a vehicle with other people, being surrounded by people at the dinner table, people that can watch out for them constantly and notice emotional changes in them. So that's not scientific, but I think that's something greater that we also need to look out for police, is that a lot of times they're alone, and we have the emotional support and eyes on us in the firehouse. Depression is kind of the same thing. You know, firefighters are almost twice as high, and then police, depending on what study you look at, are significantly higher for depression. Same with suicidal thoughts. Firefighters, almost 50% of firefighters have had suicidal thoughts at some point in their career. And then police, almost 8% have pervasive suicidal thoughts that don't leave. So it's definitely an issue. And like Mr. Kinane alluded to in his opening, suicides have exceeded line of duty deaths. And that's why I call it the silent killer. With line of duty deaths, we're very honed in on those. Every time a firefighter dies in the line of duty, I get an email from numerous sources that I follow that outline kind of what was going on, the time of day, the age of the person. So we look at that very closely, and we should. We should identify trends and things that we can do to make our personnel safer and just look at the studies overall. But something that we never really address or never hear about is the suicide rate. And as you can see, it's a good bit higher, and we just don't talk about it. It's stigmatized. We kind of sweep it under the rug, and it's time that all of us across the, you know, the first responder community need to bring it into the open. Just one more graph on kind of the increased rates for firefighters. As you can see, those numbers kind of speak for themselves. A higher rate of ideation, a higher rate of plans, and also a higher rate of attempts. So the problem's out there. So what have we done in the past few years? Several years ago, we went to the Lowcountry Firefighter Support Team. It's a team that was founded by a local firefighter to help with mental health issues. and had multiple people trained. We're currently down to 5 personnel on our peer support team in-house. Through retirements and attrition and things of that nature, some of the team members have left. So we want to rebuild this team and have somebody across all shifts at least have one person working so that if a call does happen, that person is there to begin those initial phases of that treatment. And we're not clinicians, but we know the people in our department, and if something's going on, we can usually see a change in them. We also have 24/7 support from the Lowcountry Firefighter Support Team that has their own counselors, as well as the Coastal Crisis Chaplaincy. And especially with the chaplaincy, they've been very good to police and fire. We have an excellent relationship, and it's not just a religious type thing. There's people that don't express a particular religion, but they're very good at kind of walking people through this process. And in years past, we did a critical incident stress debriefing type thing. We'd gather everybody up. It was mandated, you know, say a young child died. We'd say, okay, everybody gather up in this room, and we're going to kind of make each of you talk about it. And what we found through studies, and we work with Doug Farmer through the chaplaincy. He's a Mount Pleasant resident, former law enforcement, very knowledgeable, but he's kind of transitioning us away from that because we found that that does more harm than good as far as bringing everybody into one room. So now what we do, you know, we'll brew a pot of coffee. Everybody kind of sits around, and either Mr. Farmer or one of the chaplains comes in. We just kind of talk, and he may ask one or two people to step outside and just talk with them in private. And we found that's a gentler approach, and we get more out of people that way. They're more honest than being in the group environment. We also have the South Carolina FAST team. They provide counseling. They provide training. But also through the general legislature, they've appropriated a certain amount of money for clinicians. So if you have an event and it's event-based that isn't covered under your insurance, if it's more than these counselors can help with, they will cover up to $15,000 of your medical bills for a clinician to treat you. So that's a good program through the state. We haven't used it yet, haven't had to. We've been able to treat with these other things, but it's definitely out there and it's good to have. And then the town provides the employee assistance program through SAVE. It's a local group of counselors, and I have the power to mandate somebody to go to that. And we do it discreetly, and we do it in a manner where they're, you know, they can be on duty, and we'll put them off on training leave, and nobody knows. But it's the ability when somebody is in need of help to send them there and make them seek a counselor. And that's worked well. We've done that multiple times, and the feedback we've gotten, you know, just like anything, they can be a little bit leery at first, like, why are you making me go? But the reports we get back afterwards are very thankful, like, you know, I appreciate you allowing me to go talk to somebody and basically making me do it. So the resources are out there, but we do want to train more people in-house and have those eyes on the street that can start this chain. Our peer support team is the first line of defense in getting all the rest of these things in line. The same for police. I talked to Chief Ritchie, and I wanted to make this about police and fire, since we deal with a lot of the same issues, a lot of the same calls, but they also use the chaplaincy and the EAP program. But just like our FAST team through the state, they have resources through the state as well that provide training and counseling and suicide awareness and things of that nature. So we've done a good bit in-house, and in fire, especially Chief Williams in the previous administration recognized this years ago that this is something that's on the horizon, and he kind of got that ball rolling, and we want to keep going with it. So how do we remove the stigma? To me, that's kind of one of the biggest issues. And number one is change cultural barriers. And I included 3 cartoons of the next 3 slides. This is a firefighter who's really good at just boiling it down. He's an artist and just really bringing the issue in a simple way. So how do we change the cultural barrier? You know, firefighting, police force, it's kind of an aggressive, sometimes macho job, and it needs to be. We're going into situations that are dangerous, that are life-threatening, and we need to put on our armor and go do that. But with that, we also can't have the suck-it-up attitude anymore, and we need to realize we have to ask for help. You're more of a man, you're more of a woman if you actually ask for help than if you suppress it, and we're trying to change that barrier, have open dialogues about that. So changing the culture. 2, breaking the silence. And that comes from empowering people and changing that culture. Is it's okay to speak up. You don't have to necessarily talk to your supervisor. And something, an email that I shared with y'all a few weeks ago is, when it comes to this, chain of command doesn't exist. If you're hurting and you only feel comfortable coming to me as a chief, by all means, please. If you feel comfortable going to another firefighter, another captain, it doesn't matter. Just break the silence and we'll get you the help that you need in a discreet manner. Because it's more than just the job, it's family life, it's all the things we all deal with, and if we don't talk about it, we can't get them the help. And then two, providing awareness training to everyone. A lot of this training is free through the state or through the Lowcountry Firefighter Support Team. So we want to train people to recognize the signs. The companies that are together every day, they know each other. They become family, they spend 24 hours a day together, they eat together, they train together. So they're going to be the first ones that notice a change in that person. So we need to provide that training, provide the means for them to report it to the senior staff so that we can get them the help that they need. So just in wrapping up, here's the references I use, but it's definitely a problem. We've noted it. We've put some things in place, but there's still a lot of work to do. We want to remove that stigma. We want to empower people to speak out, to know that the help is out there, and that it's not a weakness to speak out and ask for help. So thank you again for allowing us to talk about it. It's a problem, but it's good to get it out in the open and be able to have open dialogue about it. So thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions or comments from the committee?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief, you were talking about the stigma attached. Are we doing everything in our power to heighten the awareness of what the potential of a suicide victim may look like, that someone that is acting inherently different, do we have anybody's eyes on them and bringing it to your attention so that something can be done?
Right. Are we all the way there? We're not. And that's where kind of that training and that awareness comes in, and not only empowering the person to speak out, but empowering the person to report it, that they're not going to be in trouble. We're not going to label them. Because a lot of the times I think it doesn't get reported because the captain or the crew members don't want to get that person in trouble or labeled as, you know, oh, he's got a mental illness. But that's part of the issue in and of itself. So we have to be able to empower not only the person who's suffering, but their crew. And that's where that awareness training comes in. Have we done a good job? I think we're there. I think a lot of people have reported stuff to me, but we're definitely not 100%, and nor will we ever will be. We need to revisit this every year, bringing that training as much as possible to kind of bring this into the open and say, it's okay. You know, everybody faces this at some point in their life.
Exactly. Mental health is such an important issue in today's society. I think all of us have, we either know or have been touched by family members who have suffered through mental illness.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, anything that we can do to heighten the awareness. And also you touched on something that's very important, too, that it really takes great strength, not weakness, to bring it forward and express to your superiors that there's a problem and you're looking for help. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, most people will refuse to do that because they feel like it's an act of weakness when, in fact, it really takes great strength. And so that encouragement throughout the ranks of the organization need to be really adherent.
Yes, sir. I agree.
Thank you, Chief.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Kinney?
Yeah, Chief. Do we have a registry or a list of all the police and fire peer support that we have in-house?
I can get you what we have, and I can talk to you.
I don't need it. I'm just wondering if the on-duty platoons on both sides, police and fire, would know.
Probably not.
Maybe that's something we could work on, where we just let them know, hey, we don't have any peer support on duty in the fire department tonight, but there is two in the police department. Even if we expanded it out to the sheriff's department, I mean, something really goes down. Yeah. Everybody wants to be there. Everybody wants to help the person that's hurting.
Because
when I look at you look at those numbers, and it's just heartbreaking to see if there was a piece of equipment that was causing that type of jump in line of duty deaths, you would throw every dollar and staffing thing that you had available at that problem. So that brings me into my next question. You said you have five. How many do you need, Chief?
Probably I'd say 15. And split those up between the three shifts. And that would be, you know, some people are going to take vacation injuries, but if we had five per shift, that would almost ensure that there was one on duty per day.
Okay, so do we, we need to give you the resources to free them up to go to training, or what do you need from us to make this happen as soon as possible?
The good thing is a lot of it can be in-house, especially through the state, and they'll come down, and they've already offered. I talked to the lady that runs the program up there, and she said they're happy to bring it in here, and we really, I think, I don't want this to sound disparaging, but we don't need anything from committee at this time because it's okay. Free, and we can schedule the training off our own duty and just make it work.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yes, Tom.
I love this. I'm so glad you're in this game, you know? And you talked about how the victims need support from you and from each other, and you need to know that you have our support for whatever it's going to take. The only thing that I was thinking about as you were talking is you have somebody who may not suffer from mental illness, and then the statistics on suicide, and there are probably 5 or 6 or 10 rungs of the ladder between, you know, I hate to use that analogy. How was that? I didn't even try that.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. You know, where you got this, then you get this, then it turns into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, substance abuse issues, things where people it's a tough profession. It's a really difficult profession. And for anyone to think that it doesn't affect people, then they don't understand that game.
Yes, sir.
And so, you know, we're here to help. But again, I keep thinking about the person who's just this much now, starting to slip. Suicides, that's the end result. Coastal Crisis Chaplaincy comes in sometimes when, after you had that issue. But, like, helping when the problem's that big sometimes is a little bit easier. But you do a great job because it's a family.
You're right.
And you watch out for each other in the family. And you don't let, you don't let that happen. So I don't even know what the heck I'm saying. I just love that you're doing it. And I'm glad you're in this game because it's all about the people. It's all about the people. And if we can take care of that, all the other stuff takes care of itself.
You're right.
So thanks.
Thank you. And I should have done a better job explaining that. I mean, we're not only looking for people that are suicidal. I mean, it can, especially with the town-provided EAP program, it can be marital issues and extends to the spouse as well and the children. And it can be substance abuse. It can be anything. So I kind of harped on the suicide end game, and you're right. That's where we don't want to be. Yeah. But, yeah, any little thing along the way, the counseling at EAP is free.
Yeah, that's great.
So anything that is basically anything that they want to talk about is fair game. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I will add that for 7 years I supervised people who responded to crisis, and I've seen the toll that it takes on individuals. And a lot of times we're focused on the big events that happen and responding to those, but what people don't understand is the day-to-day, the secondary trauma that just comes from the stress of the job, the stress of the job plus the family, plus money issues, plus all those things. And so it doesn't have to be the big events that we're always responding to. Those are important that we do that. But more importantly, I think, is just recognizing the day-to-day stress of just the work that's involved. So it's a great topic, Kevin. Thank you for raising that. In regards to resources, I think it's important for us to recognize that having resources available is one thing. Having them utilized is another. And I know as a supervisor, you have the right to send people to EAP when it's a job performance issue. But if it's not a job performance issue, they can still go on their own.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
and they can go without even reporting to me.
Right.
So they can contact them and do it privately, and I never have to know about it. And good for them if that's the route they want to take.
Do we know if the external resources have been utilized by, whether it be the state or Coastal Crisis Chaplaincy? Do we know if we're utilizing those services on a regular basis, or
yeah, we definitely are, especially with the chaplaincy. We've used Low Country Firefighter Support, and we've never used the state for actual to come in and counsel, but we use the chaplaincy a good bit. There's a lot of them local, and there's always somebody available. One of our members was injured in a car wreck last November. Two of them showed up at the hospital somehow they heard it through the chain, and they were there just to talk with us, to talk with the family. So we use them a good bit, and I think a lot of times people don't want to talk to a peer, and I get that. Like we talked about the stigma and, I'm going to be labeled, but when an outside person who's trusted comes in, They'll step outside, like I said, have a cup of coffee, spend 5 minutes, and we've gotten a lot off of that. And to your point about the big events, you're right. It's not normally the big events that we see this problem at. It's the medical calls or the things where maybe the victim reminded somebody of a family member, and it kind of breaks the dam. So we've seen it's really the little things, the things you would never think would affect some of these seasoned firefighters. You're like, wow, that really messed him up. But it's more, it's family. It's more things that are kind of opening up that door. So
yeah, yes, one of the things I realized on my tour was we've got a lot of guys out there and women who are young.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these guys are in their 20s, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So they're at the beginning of their career, and they may need to be modeled. That sort of thing needs to be modeled, I think, by some of our leadership. But you raised another point, which was echoed here on the committee, and that is doing more on the awareness side. And I think you're right. Sometimes in a family environment, you can reach out to people you trust, but that also makes it tougher to reach out to people you trust because they know you. And so I think it's important as we bring people, we have not only the internal support, but we also on an occasion bring in external people to do trainings, to do classes, to just to be here, whether it be mental health or other folks, where if somebody wants to talk privately, they have someone who can do that externally. So I don't know if we bring mental health counselors in occasionally through the training regimen or other times, but that also can be a useful piece just to make sure that people have that option to, you know, I'm a Catholic. Sometimes going to confession with a priest you don't know is good. You can lay it all out there and have to worry about seeing him on Sunday. So,
but that's a good point, making it more, not to interrupt, but making it more part of not just when there's an issue, but, hey, maybe yearly we bring in some training, and then these counselors will be available after the training to talk if anybody wants to reach out.
Yeah.
So that's a good point. I appreciate that.
Chief, we also have, you know about the group, but we have like 65 retired responders that live in Mount Pleasant, all from the New York area. All of us have lived through 9/11 and big events, and, you know, I'm not speaking for everyone, but there's probably a few of them that would be happy to participate in on a volunteer basis helping people out too.
So yeah, I appreciate that, and that adds a different level because you may want to talk to somebody that understands what you're going through, but not necessarily somebody that you work with to try to save face, and that's true. Talk to a like-minded individual that doesn't work in your same area.
They came from all over the world, right? Well, I see my friend Kevin back there, battalion chief from New York. They came from all over the world, and it did help. You know, I mean, the first couple of weeks we were yelling at the counselors, but by 2-3 months in, everybody was glad to see the guys from California, Boston, Florida, wherever they came from. So,
Eric, you want to?
Jeremy, I just wanted, in support of these efforts, the health insurance program that you provide to employees supports this type of effort. I mean, a visit, say, outside what Chief Mixon has mentioned, if a person wants on their own to visit a mental health professional, they can for just the copay. Because sometimes for a person to do it on their own is a high cost, but the health insurance program picks up everything but the copay. So that really helps too.
Yeah, and there are actually resources in the area for folks who can't afford that even. So there shouldn't be any barrier to folks who want assistance. I think the key is what you said, break the silence, raise the issue with somebody, and we'll have to connect them somehow to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. Good presentation. Yeah, thank you, gentlemen. We can now move on to our next item, which is one of the four topics that we're addressing this fall to increase our awareness and understanding of fire operations. And this month is the discussion of ladder readiness. And Mr. Kinane, would you like to introduce this? Or
how do you introduce ladder readiness? Let's see. I think there's a little bit of a misnomer. You know, what's the difference between an engine and a truck? You know, the engine is the infantry, but the truck is every bit of support to get water on that fire. It's life-saving device, really. I mean, everything on that ladder truck, from the smallest piece of equipment that'll pop a lock to the truck itself, is used to get to you if you're trapped in a fire. So it's such a critical component of firefighting. I've heard some of the most absurd things in the last few years. Oh, ladders are becoming obsolete or things along those lines. And it's just not the case. And my concern in Mount Pleasant is we had four ladders at one time. We have two now. We're going backwards. We got to reverse that trend. We got to get it back to 4 or maybe 6 over the next 10 years. You know, and nobody wants to hear that. Everybody, you know, I mean, we had, I sit at the committees here and I see a presentation about artificial turf fields and there's a study being done. And it's not like fire department is competing with that, but in reality, the same dollar can only be spent in one place. So we need to look at the fire department from that perspective too and have somebody look and say, where do we need to be? We certainly don't need to be going backwards. We had 4, we're at 2 now. So with that in mind, Chief, I just want to see where you think we're at and what we need to get that trend going the other way.
Yes, sir.
Chief.
Thank you. All right, so a similar presentation to the engine readiness study. I'll provide some data basically just as a format to open up dialogue. But we'll talk about number of ladders, location and distance of the stations where the ladders are housed, and then the age and reliability of the fleet. So here's our current fleet. Our two frontline units, Ladder 503 and Ladder 505, both fairly new units, very reliable, 2011, 2007. Ladder 503 is stationed right over here on 7th Avenue, and then Ladder 505 is at the Dunes West Station. Two units in reserve, a tower from 2005, then also another ladder from 2001. Here is a map of distances from the station. So you'll note the two trucks on there. That's station 3 and that's station number 5. And then the color-coded sections based upon road miles for the ladders. So anything outside of that orange color is outside of 5 miles. So that's the distance there. And then I'll note that ISO and accreditation both requested that we kind of look at this and monitor the response times in that area, and they weren't recommending anything, but just as a way to ensure that everything's covered appropriately.
Chief, is that 5 miles as the crow flies or 5 miles?
That's road miles. Yes, sir. Okay. And that's what ISO looks at specifically is road miles. So we had our GIS guy do a map to reflect that. So what have we done recently for operational readiness? Obviously, with the recent promotions, we've been able to put a captain on every ladder, which is awesome. We thank you for that. Having that leadership function on the ladder helps with training, helps with calls, helps with responding to mutual aid, and it just makes us that much better. So we appreciate that again. And then traditionally, we've differentiated between engines and ladders, but we haven't fully implemented that. And you know, that's a deployment model that some people use. They blend the two, but we're wanting to look at separating those and having defined job functions for an engine and for a ladder. So with that, we put together a ladder company operations work group. And we're blessed to have many firefighters in our organization that come from other areas, Columbus Fire Department, Charleston, that have had experience in bigger departments on ladder trucks. So there's a lot of knowledge within our own department that we want to tap into and utilize and see how can we get better every day. So we're redefining, or they are, not me, they're redefining the expectations of a ladder crew and talking about some of those things that Mr. Kinane talked about, the ventilation, the job-specific functions, and how we're starting to look at a ladder as it's a specialized company. So everybody needs to know how to fight fire. Everybody needs to know the job that encompasses engine work, pulling hose and getting to the fire and searching and all those things. But once you've become good at that, then we can transition you to a ladder and you develop those skills even further with entry and search and rescue, ventilation, all those type things that are traditional to a ladder company. So that kind of falls into develop the job functions, and we're going to do that through training. Implement those things once the work group recommends them, and really everything comes down to training. That's where we get everybody on the same page. That's where we implement new programs. Training is a key function in the fire department. We're going to develop a fire operations task list for the fire ground and have those job-specific functions. And that's not to say that, say, a ladder arrives on scene first. They're going to function as that engine. They're going to pull the hose. They're going to go in and fight fire. They're not going to wait for the engine to get there. So they can always go back to their roots and fight fire if they're first or second on scene. They can switch between roles, but for traditional fires, they're going to function in a certain way, and that takes a lot of the pressure off the incident commander. He doesn't have to give job-specific functions to every arriving company. They go to work unless told otherwise. And that just cleans things up. And then we're going to modify the policies to reflect what we found. So training opportunities is something that we've done recently. Our fire alarm policy wasn't written as well as it could be. It kind of alluded to the fact that over 99% of fire alarms are false. So we kind of gave people the impression that on a fire alarm, you just kind of show up and you check things out, and that expectation was our fault, and we've changed that. We've now said, okay, here's a chance, 1,000 fire alarms a year. Here's a chance to respond and really look in detail at each building you're going to and set up as if it was a real fire. And when you train that way 1,000 times a year, you're going to be ready when that building's going. You're going to know exactly where your truck's going to be, where your fire department connection is. And then even here on a call, they put up the ladder. They had a little extra time. They said, well, let's put it up right here and see what we can do. And we really want to set those expectations that each call could be the real deal. And if it's not, let's pre-plan that building and get ready. So we're looking at, again, to wrap up, we're looking at the job functions of a ladder truck and really redefining what they do and making it a job-specific function, and then using every opportunity we can to train and be situationally aware and ready for any call that may come, especially in our larger commercial buildings. Happy to answer any questions or go back and talk about any of the things that we talked about.
Mr. O'Rourke, I'll start with you. Is there anything you want
to? I really don't. Thank you.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the details.
Yes, sir.
I learned a lot. I'm fine.
Okay. Mr. Owens, anything?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Chief. It's a great presentation. I think it's important for us to realize that we do have two ladder trucks in reserve. I don't know what the long-term goal is for obtaining additional, but as we grow, I would imagine that needs to be factored in to establishing a time frame as to when we need to look at purchasing additional. Maybe that needs to coincide with staff. I do want to thank you. I appreciate it. One of the things I wanted to ask you was the 5 1/4 connection on your hydrants. That's typically used for your trucks for pulling water out of the hydrant.
To the truck.
Yes, sir. So, from the hydrant, that attaches directly to the pump.
Right.
Yes, sir.
The two and a half is basically fighting a fire with hose, 2.5-inch hose.
Yeah, the 2.5, so there's basically 3 1/3. That's our everyday room and contents type fire for a quick knockdown. The 2.5 is a larger body of fire. It can be used exterior, and then we transition inside with the smaller hose, or just on a commercial structure, a large body of fire. So it's the bigger hose in between the 5 and the 1 1/3 that allows us
for the volume to fight.
Yes, sir.
Fight your fires.
Yes, sir.
But I want to thank you. Appreciate all the information. It was beneficial to us as a committee, particularly our town. So
yes,
thank
sir.
You very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Kinnane.
Yes, sir. Chief, could you go back to the map, please?
Yes, sir.
And just to preface while you're doing that, it's our duty on this council to investigate town spending agencies, departments, etc. That's what I intend to do here, and it's not a knock on somebody because we have gone backwards, but we have. It's a fact that we've gone backwards, and we see the reserve ladders. They're just not going to respond because they are mothballed. The reserve ladders. If we get lucky, like we did at St. Andrews, and I got ripped apart for saying luck, but something else was out of service, and we ended up with 3 ladders. All of them were working. That's a wake-up call that says, wow, next time, maybe we actually want 3 ladders to be available. But I look at the map in that 5-mile zone. Chief, can you give me an estimate of what you think it takes to get from ladder 3 to, say, the Bellhof area?
Sure. Rough guess, maybe 12 minutes.
Pretty close to what Google tells me, so I'm guessing that's probably right, because these ladders don't move much faster than traffic in reality.
I will say that the statistic that a lot of the bodies use is Every mile is 2 minutes. So if it's 5 miles, it's 10 minutes typically. Yes, sir.
Right. So when we had a fire up there recently, and somebody brought it to my attention, somebody outside your department who's experienced in firefighting told me, did you know that the Daniel Island Ladder Company is 7 minutes away and yours are 12 and 10? And I said, that can't be right. And he said, oh, no, I'll send you the maps. And he sent me the Google Maps. And I said, wow. You know, what are we going to do to get those orange areas into green, Chief? Yeah, two ways about it. I mean, how are we going to get ladder service across the whole town that's viable for a first-line attack on a fire?
Okay. So I wish I had the other map. I didn't include it in this, but I do have it where we place a ladder back at station number 4. And to kind of go back a little bit, we did take ladders out of service, but back in those days, we did have 4 ladders, but there was only 2 personnel per ladder. Right. So not a very functional setup. It's hard for a 2-person crew to run a ladder. So a couple things happened. We noticed a trend in medical calls, so we were able to bring a squad online, but we were also able at that point to get 3 personnel per ladder. So it was kind of a give and take to get a more operationally ready crew. But we have, in looking at this and looking at some response times, one of our goals is to get a ladder back at Station 4. And we think it'll definitely fill in that middle area, and I can share that map with y'all. But
6 Mile Road.
Yes, sir. Sorry, 6 Mile Road is Station 4. Oh, yes, but we also looked at our response times, and our 4 longest responses were in District 5 and 6, which is Dunes West and Carolina Park. And honestly, what unit were we waiting on? The one in Bell Hall. So as you've brought up before, that Long Point Road 17 traverse is difficult to get up to the north area. I mean, they can respond south pretty quick, but with a second unit, firefighting unit, I mean, that would have brought our response times down by 5 minutes to get our operational response force there that we look at for our times and for accreditation. So in looking at the map and the response times and kind of the trends over the past few years, we think that's a really good strategic spot to put it, when, especially after the new building is built.
And then you could send both of those up to those areas that were having trouble getting the full response up there.
Yeah, absolutely.
41 corridor from 6 Mile.
Right. So I don't.
It's still. I mean, I do Google my own. On a Google Maps, I do it at my own house, and it's still not 7 minutes. I mean, you're talking about 12, 15 minutes still. So my point is, we need to agree on what response patterns we think is acceptable. Are we doing an interior structural attack with a 12-minute response? The answer is no, we're not. And we need to be honest with our citizens that we're not doing it for the whole town. Or, in the alternative, let's get there. I prefer let's get there. You know, let's get the town equipped to do an actual interior structural attack, which is what people expect. They're not going to expect an engine to roll up and say, well, wait, no more guys, sorry. And I'm not saying they will do that.
Right. And they wouldn't, but yeah.
They're going to go in, and they're going to put themselves at risk. I know how firefighters operate, believe me. But what are we doing? Last month and this month, the same thing. The same thing comes up. Well, we need more. So where do we go next?
And you mentioned the Daniel Island station. That's something that we're looking at, is, and maybe that's a viable option. And I want to readdress that auto aid study we did 3 years ago and kind of see how it affects us. Are we going to get called an exponential number of times more than they respond? But, you know, Daniel Island's right there. Cane Hoy's there now, like we've talked about before. The city's right there. So that may be a viable option, too, not to have to purchase so many units. We can share with each other.
Yeah, and I never saw the actual study. I've heard about it 100 times. I don't want to see our companies going to Daniel Island for a nosebleed, but if our companies are called to go for a fire, that's a benefit to our town. Mm-hmm. Because we're providing real-time fire duty to our firefighters that makes them better. I mean, I have no problem with them going out for a fire. The medical runs, that's where you have to tweak it.
Well, you're right, and we provide a different level of service than the neighboring departments. We're ALS, and they're working towards it, but they're not paramedic level yet. So that's part of it. Are we going to get called? And I'm with you. I don't mind sending the guys downtown to fight fire, because that's a lot of good training and something that they'll see more in the different areas, but we don't want to put ourselves in a bad position to deal with a stub toe or something of that nature, not to be disparaging to those calls because they're important too, but we don't want to send our units out for those.
They're minor EMS calls at other jurisdictions are not your problem, and right. It shouldn't be, Chief.
Right.
Thank you, Chief. A couple of questions, just follow-up questions. One is very basic. You mentioned a ladder truck and a tower truck.
Mm-hmm.
What's the substantial difference?
So a tower, if you've ever noticed, is a big bucket on the end of the ladder. So depending on weight limits, two or three personnel can stand in that bucket, kind of like a cherry picker, okay, and use that. A ladder is just a straight stick, basically one person operating off the end.
Okay.
And the stick is much quicker to get to a window. That stick is way faster than the towers are.
Okay. So in terms of standards, are there specific standards that say based on population or response time or, you know, whatever it is, that you would need an additional ladder truck?
Well, like we mentioned earlier, the ISO does go by road miles, and we improved to a 2, but we feel that especially bringing up another ladder with additional personnel would help us possibly move toward that 1. So that's kind of a standard. They specifically look at firefighting force, and they grade you based upon that. And they don't tell you where to put it, but they do look at road miles. They look at area coverage. They look at the large commercial structures in your district and then formulate a score based upon that. Accreditation did also note when they were here in 2016 that just to keep an eye on response times in that area of Station 4, and they weren't recommending that we put a ladder, but they wanted us to look hard at that area since there was, somewhat of a perceived service gap right there.
Okay. And I would assume that looking forward 5-10 years from now, that given the fact that we're going to have more height at Patriots Point, we're seeing some taller buildings being built around town, that also plays into the need for?
Yes, sir, and especially in that 6-mile Isle of Palms area, I mean, you've seen the growth. They're very vertical at this point. And you're right, as we get bigger, we're only going to be able to go up with fill-in and things of that nature. So they're it's not something that we use every day, but when we need them, they're a vital piece of equipment. A very specialized, what we want to do is do a very specialized crew that can respond to those type things.
Okay. And so the renovations that are being, or the rebuild that's being done at 6 Mile, that will accommodate a ladder truck that's being planned?
Yes, sir. It's currently a 2-bay station, and we're going to increase that. We're not sure how many will go, but it'll definitely be more than 2, and we'll have room for the current rescue truck, the ladder, and then whatever other, however we choose to do a deployment, but both of them will fit. Yes, sir.
And just looking at the map, you know, it just occurs to me, obviously, that perhaps coverage could be improved somewhat, but just by looking at where the trucks are based. I mean, we've got one way to the south that doesn't really seem to be centered in that, you know, so I don't know if property acquisition is something we look at, stations, or just being able to locate, but I'm sure y'all have looked at that in terms of where things are located, but is that really the best placement today or in the future for those ladders? Or?
Well, I definitely think that the one at Station 4 is a perfect location because they can hit multiple districts. They're at that, now they're midtown. I mean, they're right there in the middle. They can go north or south. But, I mean, it's a valid point. Do we want to, and we can look at anything. I can have our GIS guy, you know, pull that over to Station 2 in Bell Hall and see does that affect it, or if we move one down or add another one at 6, how does that go? So definitely something that we're looking at for the future.
And I assume with the strategic plan process going forward that it sounds like planning for an additional ladder, whenever that is something that is being considered. So
it is being considered, yes, sir.
I think the question maybe then is how quickly, right, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, it's like we've gone over the staffing of, you know, the NFPA requirements, and we're nowhere near meeting them. I'm not saying that needs to be our goal. Our goal needs to be adequate fire protection, period. You know, whether it's more than what NFPA wants, so be it. I mean, we do the best. We want to be the best at everything, right? So let's do it. The other thing I think, you mentioned the tall buildings, Bob. With the issue of the tall buildings is you're not going to get use the ladder necessarily if it's a high floor fire, but you need the staffing, yeah, that the ladders will bring. You know, with that 43 number, 43 on duty firefighters for a hotel fire, we don't got it. We have about 30. So You heard it here first. You know, one day it's going to be on the news, and people are going to go, what was that fire committee meeting? You know, it might be something to chuckle at today, but it's not going to be to chuckle at when it's on the front page of the paper that we knew about this and did nothing. So I think we need to do it for the next budget cycle.
Mr. Owens?
Yes, I'd agree. I think that if we continue to put off tomorrow what can be done today, we're always going to be making up for lost time. And I think we need to act sooner than later so that we don't prolong this effort. But I want to thank you for your presentation and making us aware.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And so is the intention here to have the five-year plan ready for review prior to budget?
Yes, sir.
Coming up. The coming year.
Yeah, okay. Next month. I hope to have it ready for you next month, okay, so that you can review it and have a couple of months to.
So we'll be
decide.
Able to look at the priorities and perhaps make some recommendations for the upcoming budget year. Yeah. And Tom will find all the money we need. Thank you, sir.
No money.
Now. Thank you, Chief. That was a good presentation. Good understanding. Which brings us to our next agenda item today, which is adjournment. You'll be good for that?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Tom, thanks for the segue on the ladder, too. That was good.
I didn't. Yeah. I say that a lot.
You're so good, you don't even know.
I didn't know I'd have I'd be in a meeting where it worked. Do you know that every meeting has been on time today? This is good. If this continues, I've only got one more. I'm guessing that's the one we can screw up.
What's up?
My what?
Your knee.
My knee is so good.